The power of speech. Have you ever considered the power a word uttered can have on others? Or the effect that words we write by way of texts and emails can have on others? Words are powerful, aren't they? They have the power to give hope, like the word of our God does for us. They can make people happy. They can evoke a lot of emotional responses like joy, love, sympathy, empathy, and many more. However, experience tells us that they don't always evoke positive responses. On the contrary, words can have the power to cause a negative reaction. They can inflict pain. They can make people angry and upset. This can and has led to hatred, aggression, whether exhibited passively or physically. The saying, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but names shall never hurt me," was brought about because words, or in this case name-calling, do hurt us. It was probably said as a way to make people more resilient against the negative effect that words can have. Behind every word we speak, though, is a thought. Whether that thought is well-considered, or the thought has come from the deeper subconscious part of our mind, what we speak will always come from some thought within us. The word of our God is no different. John tells us that in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Greek word for word is logos, which Vine's dictionary defines as the expression of thought. What is thought, then? Unsurprisingly, a thought is an energy signal within the brain. What is surprising is that the energy signal of a thought contains mass, because the energy of that thought is transported through the movement of ions. These ions, or electrically charged atoms and molecules, have a physical weight that can be measured, although that weight is very, very small. The complexity of the thought will determine how much that thought will weigh. Perhaps this is why, when we have a lot on our minds, when we are deep in serious thought and have a lot on our plate, we can feel under pressure from the weight of our thoughts. We can feel the weight of the world, as it were, on our shoulders. A thought, then, is not just some ethereal concept, but it has a real physical presence. When we communicate with someone, we are trying to transfer our thoughts into the mind of the listener. When they take on board what we are trying to convey, their minds are taking on the physical energy of our thought, which then has the ability to direct the way they think. This is why it is so important to think before we speak. An example of the power speech and language can be found in Genesis 11, when the children of men were coming together to build the Tower of Babel. We know the story from Sunday school, that the world was of one language and of one speech. Here was a group of people who started talking to each other about how great it would be to have a city that they could call home and to build a tower to reach the heavens. What would have started out as a single thought in the mind of one person then grew in the minds of others until it became a unified effort in a group of people hoping to realize their dream. Unfortunately, their dream did not include their creator. They did not want to be called by his name, but they wanted to make a name for themselves. Here, the power of a thought caused a group of people to be unified under one goal. They all came together and worked together for one purpose. This unified purpose, devoid of God, happened quite quickly after the flood, fewer than 400 years. Given that the world needed to be repopulated, starting with only 8 people, 400 years is not that long. It is highly probable that the initial thought came from Nimrod, as his name means "we will rebel," and Babel was the beginning of his kingdom, the kingdom of men. Can we imagine where the world would have ended up if the children of men continued on that trajectory? It is no wonder God confused their language and foiled their plans. According to the Companion Bible, God's first call to Abram was during this same time, which highlights the difference between the power that a word from a man can have, as opposed to the power the word of God can have. One has only a temporal effect, while the other is eternal. Is the world as we know it now different to that time? It seems the world is speaking the same language now, essentially wanting the same thing, to diminish God and to make a name for themselves by removing from society the godly morals that shape us into something more than just animals. This is another sign that God will soon intervene with his son returning to the earth, just like he intervened when they were building the tower. Each of us can be likened to the communication towers you see around us, as we are constantly transmitting and receiving data or information. We transmit information by what we say, how we say it, what we write, how we write it, our body language, our facial expressions, and through touch. We receive that information through our eyes, our ears, and through our other senses as well. And just like modern technology, the information we try to convey and the information that we take on board can become corrupted, so that the information received is not the information that was intended to be received. This can happen when we say something, but the words we use do not properly convey our thoughts, or it could be the right words, but they were said in the wrong tone. Our emotional state and past experiences can corrupt information we receive. Where the words that we hear may trigger past memories of a bad situation, we can have a preconceived notion that the information we receive is coming from a person who is untrustworthy, or that they might have a hidden agenda they are wanting to push. Communication is a two-way street, and it highlights the need to not only think before we speak, but also to listen to what is being said with an open mind. Like the saying goes, the mind is like a parachute. It doesn't function unless it is open. Perhaps that is why we have two ears and one mouth. Is this telling us that we need to listen more and speak less? An example of communication that was corrupted can be found in Joshua 22. It is a case of a serious miscommunication that almost resulted in civil war. The Reubenites, Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh fulfilled their obligation to Moses in coming across the Jordan River to help the rest of the tribes conquer the promised land so that they could settle in their portions of land. This is what they had to do if they wanted to settle on the eastern side of Jordan, in the lands of Gilead and Bashan. They honoured their agreement. They fought side by side with their brethren for around 7 or 8 years, not even returning to their families during that time. When they did get to return home, they had an idea to set up an altar on the western side of the Jordan River, on Israel's side. Their idea was to make an altar exactly the same as the one in the tabernacle at Shiloh, although somewhat larger in size, so that it could be seen from afar off and be a reminder to everyone walking by that Israel had brothers on the other side of Jordan too. They were worried that they would be forgotten, being on the eastern side, and that the Jordan River would become a natural boundary between them. When Israel heard what they had done, they weren't happy at all. They jumped to the conclusion that the eastern tribes had done something that was a violation of God's law. They thought that because it was an altar in the very image of the one in the tabernacle, that they even meant to use it to sacrifice offerings, and possibly not even to Yahweh. Offering sacrifices on an altar other than in the place where God chose to put his name there was a sin. This law taught the people that we are to approach God on his terms and in the way he has appointed, not the other way around. This miscommunication riled Israel so much that they all came together to go to war against their brethren, the same brethren who fought side by side with them not long beforehand. Thankfully, they followed a process that God had set out for a situation like this in Deuteronomy 13. In Deuteronomy 13, God told them that if they heard of someone seeking to serve other gods, they were to do three things. They were to inquire, make search, and ask diligently, and then act if it was found to be true. They were not to act before they searched out the matter. The Proverbs say, "He that answereth a matter before he heareth it, it is folly and shame unto him." It is a similar process to what Christ had commanded us to follow in Matthew, where he says, "If thy brother shall trespass against thee, go and tell him his fault between thee and him alone. If he shall hear thee, thou hast gained thy brother. But if he will not hear thee, Then take with thee one or two more, that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he shall neglect to hear them, tell it unto the ecclesia. But if he neglect to hear the ecclesia, let him be put unto thee as an heathen man and a publican. Israel chose to send Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, along with one prince of each of the 10 tribes that were on the western side of the Jordan. So 11 people were selected to represent the whole of the 10 tribes and to have a meeting with the eastern tribes. Phinehas would have been chosen because of his zealousness for God. About a year before, they had all crossed the Jordan for the first time, and Israel had sinned with Moab by worshipping Baal Peor and sacrificing to it in Numbers chapter 25. In that incident, there was a prince of the tribe of Simeon who blatantly took a Midianite woman and paraded her in front of everyone and went into the tent with her. Phinehas was so overcome with zeal that he took a javelin and pierced them both through with it. His act of zeal for God halted the plague that God had sent through Israel, which resulted in the deaths of 24,000 people. This act was counted to him as righteousness, and he would have been respected by any God-fearing person, hence why he would have been chosen to lead the discussions. It is easy to see why Israel jumped to the conclusion they did, because the sting of that incident with Moab affected the whole of Israel, and after 10 years was still being felt. They did not want a repeat of that situation where they would be affected by the actions of the other tribes. It was very much a case of Israel being one body, and when something happens to one member of the body, the whole body feels it. It is no different to the ecclesia now. The meeting between the two parties took place following the process God had put in place. Firstly, the accusation was made by Phinehas and the representatives of the 10 tribes. They communicated their concerns and fears, bringing to mind what happened with Moab and also what happened to Achan when he stole from God at Jericho. On both occasions, the effects were felt right across Israel, with deaths from plague and defeat. They were worried that the actions of a few could have a disastrous effect on the whole nation. In response to this, the tribes of Reuben, Gad, and half of Manasseh gave their side of the story. Where Phinehas's accusation had come across as quite aggressive, the response came back as humble. They could have easily been offended and responded with similar aggression, but because their intentions were pure, they could see that they had been misunderstood. Their response included phrases like, "If it be in rebellion, or if in transgression against Yahweh, save us not this day. Let Yahweh himself require it." Or in other words, "Let Yahweh himself search our intentions out. God forbid that we should rebel against Yahweh." Anyone filled with pride and self-will would not use these phrases. Phinehas and the 10 representatives were pleased with this response. They stated that it was by their explanation that they had actually saved the children of Israel from sinning against Yahweh by stopping them from going to war needlessly against their brethren. The tables had turned on who it was that was about to sin against their God. If it wasn't for them following the process that God had set out for them in these situations, similar to Matthew 18 for us, it would have ended up in civil war with its subsequent evils and punishment by God. A number of helpful points can be gathered from this account when it comes to communication. Firstly, all through the process, we see that fear was involved in one way or another. It was fear that drove the eastern tribes to come up with the idea of setting up an altar to be a witness for the generations to come, so that they would not be cut off from their brethren on the other side of Jordan. It was fear that caused Israel to think to go to war against the eastern tribes because they were afraid of the repercussions from God if the altar was going to be used for sacrifices. It was fear that caused the initial accusation from Phinehas and the 10 representatives to come across as aggressive, rather than speaking with humility to their brethren. If the eastern tribes had more faith in their God, they would not have come up with the idea to set up an altar of witness in the first place, as God would have ensured that they were never cut off from their brethren on the other side of Jordan. Not setting up the altar would have meant that there would be no miscommunication in the first place. Thirdly, the western tribes could have taken a calmer view when they first heard the news of an altar being set up. Nothing in what they heard states that the altar had been set up for sacrifices. just that an altar had been built. But we know emotions are hard to put to one side when we feel something that we hold so dear is being threatened. They were no different. They would have felt like this, because what purpose would there logically be to have an altar built but for sacrifice? Knowing that sacrificing on an altar from where God placed his name in Shiloh went against the law of God, the Western tribes would have felt justified in their belief that the conclusion that they had come to was the right one. This teaches us, right from the beginning, that we need to put our emotions aside and simply follow the process that God has laid out for us. We will not know the real reason for an action until we speak with the other party face to face. Fourthly, when both parties came together, a commendable thing that they both did was to quietly listen to the concerns and the explanation of the other party. They did not cut each other off or talk over each other. Doing this makes the other party feel unheard and that what they have to say is unimportant. And this can break down the lines of communication very quickly.